T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Say my name.
Mike Florio.
Get the name right. That's all that matters. Spell my name right or say my name properly.
Pro Football Talk and NBC Sports.
Hearing Florio writing articles about it.
NFL Insider.
Take a spin around the league. We bring in Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio.
Mike Florio.
My name is my name.
With Bernstein and McKnight on 670 The Score.
Top of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz of the Big Ten West Division and Holiday Bowl champions at Ryan Field this fall when they host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at nusports.com. Mike Florio, who is on Twitter at Pro Football Talk, he of NBC Sports and ProFootballTalk.com, joins us in the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Mike, here we are in the second wave of free agency, and now we're seeing some big names in new places.
Yeah, you know, by the way, I have a Ford, so I guess that makes it even more appropriate. I have a Ford F-150 Raptor.
Well, you need it for driving around the mountains of West
Virginia. Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So, anyway, yes, the second wave finally landing on guys who possibly wanted too much in wave one, or guys who were cut after wave one, like Vontaze Burfict, and quickly found a home with the Oakland Raiders, the team that probably was conceived with the thought of Vontaze Burfict eventually playing for them in mind.
Yeah, why are they choosing this? You've got it on your website on Pro Football Talk. Mike Mayock called Vontaze Burfict non-draftable in 2012. He's not friends with Antonio Bryant. Why are they choosing this?
Well, this is John Gruden, and regardless of what Mike Mayock ever said or has said, and I think that Mayock's assessment illustrates the disconnect between the pre-draft process and reality. You can call a guy not draftable, and he can end up being a contributor for 7 years in the NFL and playing well enough that even with all the warts and suspensions and fines and penalties, he instantly gets snatched by another team. And this is John Gruden calling the shots. This is John Gruden aspiring to have the Bengals defense in Oakland, and they need to do something to improve that defense. It's going to be fascinating to see how they use those 3 first-round picks, because they got to deal with Patrick Mahomes for the next 15 years. And so they're hoping they can have a disruptive defense with a strong front 7 and a great secondary. And Vontaze Burfict is a guy who sets the tone for the defense. Now, sometimes he jumps across the line, but his teammates will love him. His opponents will hate him. And I think that he will be even more Vontaze Burfict than Vontaze Burfict has ever been now that he's wearing the silver and black.
Seeing that Jordy Nelson is drawing interest from multiple teams, but not among them is the Packers. So in my mind, if I'm another team, I have to say, wait a second. This is Aaron Rodgers' favorite guy. This was his little blankie. This was his toy. This was the guy that made everything work. If the Packers aren't interested at this stage of Aaron Rodgers' career, isn't that enough to say not for me either?
Yeah, unless the Packers at some level are trying to send a not-so-subtle message to Aaron Rodgers that he just works here. He gets paid a lot of money to just work there, but he's not calling the shots. They moved on from Randall Cobb, and there was a report that last season they could have traded Randall Cobb to the Patriots. They decided not to, and there's some thought that maybe it's because they didn't want to make Aaron upset in the same year they got rid of Jordy Nelson. But I think part of what the Packers need to do during these final years of Aaron Rodgers' career is just establish the roles and the relationships as to who's in charge and who isn't in charge. And that may not be easy to do. The horse may be too far out of the barn, but that may have something to do with it. And I think they like the young receivers they have. And, you know, the question is, do you want to roll the dice on a guy who maybe doesn't have a lot of tread left on the tires? And he could play a role for another team, but I think that the Packers are very happy with the young and cheap receivers they have under contract.
Speaking of Randall Cobb, how much tread is left on his tires?
A lot of injuries last year for him. He did not have a great season. The hope is, number one, he's healthy, and number two, that he can simulate Cole Beasley in the slot, maybe play outside. He'll be the number two to Amari Cooper, presumably. and they hope that there is still something there that he can contribute, that he can do something. He was drafted in 2011, so this is year number 9. He should still be able to run and catch, and the key is staying healthy, and the key is finding ways to creatively use him. Creatively is the key word for this Cowboys offense. Under Kellen Moore, the new offensive coordinator, they have to do more than run the ball, play action pass, run the ball, play action pass. And maybe having a guy like Randall Cobb allows them to do that. But, you know, it's a calculated risk. It's not a huge expense. But at a time when they have plenty of their own players, they need to figure out how to sign. You plunk $5 million down on a guy who's either on the wrong side of 30 or close to it, you're taking a risk.
Is it wrong to say the Rams got a real bargain in Blake Bortles?
Well, yeah.
Ask and answer, counselor.
You know, and I'm influenced by having 4 days a week with Chris Sims on Pro Football Talk Live, where Sims has had Bortles at number 70 on the list of total quarterback rankings. And it's funny, Dave Caldwell, the Jaguars GM, said when we interviewed him at the scouting combine, "I'm just impressed you've taken the time to break down the film on the other 69 to come to that conclusion." But I don't know, there is film on 70 total quarterbacks, but Bortles just isn't good. He hasn't been good. He's generated some big stats in seasons where they were getting blown out, so the defenses were basically calling the dogs off late in the game. But the idea is he's going to be the traditional backup, the guy who only plays in case of emergency. And even then, you don't expect the backup to do a lot of things. He's there to support Jared Goff, to help Jared Goff. I don't know how much he's going to push Jared Goff. The best backup is a guy who will support you and help you and know his place, but still find ways to push you and challenge you to make you better without threatening you. And it's a tough balance, and there are different kinds of backups. Some aspire to be number one. I don't think Blake Bortles does. And, you know, here's the other question. It's not like Jared Goff is one of the top three or four quarterbacks in the league either. And that missed throw to Brandon Cooks, who was wide open in the second half of the Super Bowl and could have changed everything. First of all, he didn't see him. Then when he saw him, he didn't deliver it with the kind of zip and accuracy necessary to make it into a touchdown. So again, it's not like we're talking about Tom Brady or Drew Brees in his prime with Jared Goff. So I don't know how much of a gap there is between Goff and Bortles if Goff would get hurt. And then the question is, how much can McVay make any quarterback better than what he would otherwise be?
So I don't understand a whole lot of the words used at MIT's Sloan Sports Conference, but they awarded the Raiders the best transaction made last season for getting rid of Khalil Mack, mostly because of the draft picks they recouped. You into this, Mike?
No, I'm not. And here's the problem. You use those draft picks to find generational talent, to find potential Hall of Famers. So when one of the lottery tickets you have scratched off says you are the winner of the jackpot, you don't trade that in for more lottery tickets. You hold on to that. And I understand you have to pay a lot of money to keep the guy, but I don't buy the idea that he was too expensive, that they can't fit him under the salary cap. Look, the cap's now $188.2 million. Derek Carr's contract is extremely reasonable in comparison to others that have been done since then. They could have found a way to keep Khalil Mack. Here's what happened. John Gruden came in with that fake tough guy routine, and he thought that they would get Khalil Mack to play last year under his fifth-year option salary of like $13 million. And Mack called their bluff and called their bluff and called their bluff, and they finally realized, you know what, we're not going to get this guy to show up. We better get what we can. And so, you know, did they get a good haul for him? Yeah, he's a Hall of Fame player. So, yeah, you should get that for the guy. And that's, look, analytics has a place in football. But every once in a while, this whole concept of analytics hoists itself on its own petard, and this is the prime example of it, because nobody who gets it is going to say it was a good move for the Raiders to move Khalil Mack.
Unless 3 or 4 years from now, someone will make that argument and everybody will forget that we're discussing it right now.
Well, if the Raiders draft other Khalil Macks, right?
Right.
I mean, that's the thing. It's such a crapshoot to get a great player. And back in 2014, my understanding was Mark Davis, the owner of the Raiders, wanted Derek Carr with that fifth pick in round one. And Reggie McKenzie, then the GM, convinced him to be patient, convinced him that Carr would be there in round two. And they got both guys that they really, really wanted. And Mack ended up being far better than Carr is at their respective positions. You don't give up a guy like that. You find a way to make it work. You never let him go. That's the flaw in all this. So, yeah, hey, great job getting return on a great player, but bad job not finding a way to keep a great player on your team.
Is Rob Gronkowski going to retire?
I was convinced leading up to the Super Bowl and in the immediate aftermath of it that he was, when he said after the win over the Rams that I'll make a decision within the next week or two. I thought that meant I'll announce a decision in the next week or two. That your decision's made, if that's your timeline. Here we are 6-7 weeks removed from the Super Bowl. He hasn't announced anything. And Drew Rosenhaus's agent was on the Peter King podcast last week and, you know, kind of suggesting that retirement is still in play. He can make a lot of money doing other things. I just feel like he doesn't feel compelled to commit. And here's the other side of this. If he does say I'm playing, there's a chance the Patriots say, you're not playing for us anymore. We're going to move on from you 1 year too early instead of 1 year too late. And maybe he's, and I'm spitballing here, maybe he's waiting to make his final decision until he knows whether or not the Patriots even want him. And if the Patriots don't want him, then it's easier for him to say, I'm moving on. But if they do want him and he wants to play, that's a different analysis altogether. So that could be the fly in the ointment here. That he doesn't want to say I'm coming back until he knows he's going to be welcome back.
And we sort of take it as a given when you say there's a lot of other things he could do. Are we sure of that? Because I never know with Gronk what's real, what's kind of a character, how much he's, you know, actually like half golden retriever, or if he's a lot sharper than he's letting on. I don't really know. I don't know if he can act. I don't know if he could be a game show host. I don't know what's next.
I think he is smarter than he seems, primarily because that bar is so low. But I pulled up the script for the original Terminator movie because they think he can be an action hero. In the original Terminator movie, Arnold Schwarzenegger had, if I recall correctly, 13 lines. And most of them were like, yes, no, I'll be back. So I think Gronk can pull that off. He had a cameo in some like F-level movie a couple of years ago, and he had one line, and it was horrendous. And he did a roast, and remember when he did the roast, and he went up, and he just can't deliver the jokes, and they were just kind of, it's just like, he's an overgrown kid, and he's going to need a lot of spit and polish, but he's Gronk. And lightning strikes every once in a while. I know Howie Long tried to do it. Brian Bosworth tried to do it. It doesn't always work. But every once in a while, you get some big muscled up knucklehead and you can make him into an actor. And the next thing you know, you've got Dwayne The Rock Johnson. So it's worth a try at least. And if nothing else, he can just be Gronk. He can do a cruise with a bunch of Patriots fans every 4 months and make a bunch of money drinking beer and being Gronk. And, you know, he can find different roles just being Gronk. And, you know, that it's not going to quite be the Peyton Manning commercial experience, but he could make a good amount of money just being Gronk for the next 30 years.
That doesn't age well, though. I mean, that's, you know what I mean? Like, that's fine, but when you're, you know, when you're all stooped over and your knees have fallen apart and your hair is gone and you get, you know.
Kiss is still on tour, so.
That's good point.
Mike, I'm going to see him next week,
no,
too.
No, you're not.
Really?
Are you really?
Yeah.
You
I can't help
Kiss
it, man.
Tickets.
Yeah, I did. I can't help it. I mean, I saw him for the first time in 1979, so this is a perfect bookend to how it all got started, and I had to do it. And I see some of the clips online, and it's like, why in the hell did I do this? But I just have to do it.
Where did you see him? Where did you see him in 79?
I saw him in Pittsburgh, January of 1979. And there's just something about that. I don't know how old you guys are, but I grew up in the 70s. And when I saw that whole get up and that routine the first time, it was so different than seeing, you know, guys with long hair and scraggly mustaches and ratty T-shirts, that there was a theatrical element to the music. And there was just something that resonated with me and plenty of other kids in the 70s. And, you know, it's still there 40 years later.
Yeah,
so
I'm 49. And I remember when they were selling the Kiss action figures.
I had them.
And it was like the biggest thing. Oh, my God, there's the big commercial and there's the kids playing with it. And it was like the G.I. Joe was for, it's like, forget that. You can have your G.I. Joe. Look at this and the platform shoes, man.
And let me tell you, I don't want to get too philosophical here, but I'll tell you this in all candor. I heard Paul Stanley, the guy with the star, the only asymmetrical member of Kiss, the star over the one eye. He explained at one point that they were determined to create the experience that they would have paid money to witness. And when I was figuring out what the hell I'm going to do with this website back in 2001, that was my guiding principle. Make the thing that you would be a customer of. And that always stuck with me. So anybody out there that, you know, doesn't like what we do, blame KISS.
Business tips from Stanley Burt Eisen, also known as Stanley Eisen.
I once asked Rich Eisen if he's related to Paul Stanley, and he had no idea what I was talking about.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Do you do you have like a dig me room with KISS posters still?
No, I'm not quite that, but I do have some of the old vinyl records in my closet in my office. I've got a big poster of the Dress to Kill album cover down in my barn.
Hell yeah.
What else do I have? I've got a little Gene Simmons action figure floating around somewhere.
I feel like you need a bass guitar with an axe on it or something.
I actually have the Paul Stanley, like, signature Ibanez guitar with that shape that he designed,
right,
with a fake Paul Stanley autograph on it. But I don't tell anybody it's fake, so they think Paul Stanley autographed it. Of course, I probably shouldn't have just said that.
We won't tell anybody.
Right. Standing. This is great, Mike. Thanks.
I'll see you guys. Yeah, high-end stuff about the National Football League. Bye. You
better believe it. Mike Florio at Pro Football
Talk.
That's
so awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, you can get a Paul Stanley Ibanez for just a couple of bucks. That's not a... I mean, if you're a KISS fan and you want to be like Mike Florio, you can get yourself into one of these.
That's cool, though.
That is cool.
Yeah, go from 1979 to 2019 and put a bow on it.
I mean, I'm 33, so growing up, KISS was always just kind of like not a joke.
No, they were a joke.
But they were an act. I mean, when I grew up, we had a bunch of my friends' dads who still listened to a lot of that stuff and were big, you know, they were KISS fans. So they weren't necessarily a joke, but they seemed like an act. And then you get into some of the music, like Detroit Rock City and stuff. Like, that's, you're like, oh, this is what they do? This is kind of good. Like, some of this is pretty good.
Yeah.
It's not like they're playing a whole bunch of joke rock.
Yeah. I always was afraid of the people I knew who were too in, like only listen to KISS.
Yeah.
That was a type of guy. And I do say guy, because I don't know that they have a female fan.
It's the whole Family Guy bit, right? Where they go to the KISS concert, and Lois has no idea what's going on. She's been placating Peter with her KISS love for years and years.
Really?
It's one of the best episodes.
And they had the video of KISS Save Santa.
There was a dangerous aspect to them. It was also at a time where there were all these weird rumors about Gene Simmons, and before the internet, when things would get started, it's like, is it true? Like the blood came from a live bat that he ate, and
of course,
he had a special surgery to lengthen his tongue, and all like this. Like, what the?
Do we know that's not true? Has that been debunked as well?
I don't know.
I'm going to hold on to that one.
Going around, but I forgot. Like, then they said one guy was dead and replaced by a doppelganger of another guy. And this was, we lived in odd times. That's always cool. And by the way, you're with me on Gronk.
What? Did he
like
did
not
he's,
knowing what's real and what's not and what he can do and what he can't
know.
Do and how
I mean,
much
watch,
he's in on the
you
bit?
You watch the rest of that family and you kind of think, I don't know, man. Still, though, I mean, I saw the episode of Entourage he was on. And I like Entourage. The first three seasons were pretty entertaining. But when his acting stands out as bad on Entourage, you really got to question his ability to act in the future.
Of former football players, former NFL players who became actors.
Mark Harmon.
Not NFL, right?
He didn't get a cup of coffee?
I don't think so.
I thought he got himself a cup of coffee.
Are there any former NFL players not who have been nominated for or who have won an Academy Award? I wonder how high the bar is. I mean, there's been many successful actors. I mean, O.J. Simpson, very successful. Burt Reynolds didn't play in the NFL, did he?
No.
Burt Reynolds was a star at Florida State.
No, he blew out his knee, right?
Yeah,
isn't that why he got into acting?
Star college.
Like Merlin Olsen?
Oh, wait, Tommy Lee Jones, right? But he wasn't NFL.
He didn't play the NFL. Texas?
Harvard.
Harvard, that's right. He was Al Gore's roommate.
Yeah, he was Al Gore's roommate at Harvard. He was an offensive lineman. Ed O'Neill played in the exhibition season with the Steelers. I wonder if there's a...
It doesn't look like Mark Harmon played in the NFL. I thought he had gotten himself onto like a practice roster or something like that. He did not.
I don't think so. I don't know. And O.J. never was... I mean, he was a very well-paid actor, but...
Yes.
And well-paid murderer also.
Probably that.
It's not Butkus, I don't think. And did Terry Crews play in the NFL?
Oh, you know what? Did he have practice squad stuff? President Camacho?
I don't think that counts. I think you have to play a regular season snap for the purposes of this.
Are we counting the Ed Obradovich cameo and Brian song?
We are not, because that technically that's not a. It's also not a movie. That was a television movie. So I wouldn't say like an actual movie actor. I wonder who is the best of any actual former NFL player.
I don't think Terry Crews played in an NFL game. He did spend time on NFL practice squads, I think plural. I don't believe he got himself into a game.
All good names here. Fred Dreyer, Carl Weathers, The Rock, John Matuszak,
who
was
Sloth
and
Goonies. No, it's Terry Crews.
Hey. Since when does the defensive lineman have to race the defensive halfback?
You're not racing against me, you're racing against the clock.
I still ought to have some kind of a handicap.
Well, you said the defensive backfield was your handicap all last year, OB.
Oh, shut up, Rick. You're still a rookie to me.
Line studs.
Crews did. Over the course of three different seasons, spread out over 5 years, he did. Rams, San Diego, and Washington. He played in a handful of games and did not register but three tackles. Three career tackles.
Yeah, but I don't think Terry Crews has not been nominated for an Oscar.
No, but if you had to put odds on it as the next former NFL player to be nominated for an Oscar, he'd still be your favorite, not Rob Gronkowski.
Unless he was very close with White Chicks.
Unless The Rock does Hamlet. I mean, come on. You never know if he could do a star turn.
I think I'd still put it on
Danish
Terry
Prince.
Crews. That's your guy.
Got a call for Bubba Smith and Dan Marino in Ace Ventura.
You're a weird guy, Ace.
Weird guy.
So horrible.
Take 7,000. I get to see the guy with the little clicky.
The eyes glazed over.
The clapperboard thing.
Dan Marino. Take 75,000.
That's the one they used.
Exactly.
That's the,
that'll work.
Yeah, that's the one. It's like, all right, print it. We gotta get out of here. We're losing the light. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. Man, do we have giveaways still left to go. We're qualifying you possibly to win Cubs season tickets. We got a pair of center ice suite tickets to see Chicago St. Louis April 3rd at the United Center. David Hochberg has that for you possibly. And you never know, we're going to be giving these things away.
Yeah, plus we'll talk tournament with Brian Hamilton of The Athletic coming up at 1040. It's 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Peter, look, there's Dave and Dottie, the nudists.
Well, hey there, Griffins.
Dave, Dottie, what a pleasant surprise.
Don't tell me you're Kiss freaks, too.
Kiss Army Souls 1977, how about you?
76? I don't think anyone knows more about Kiss than I do.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Peter, it's not important.
Let him answer, Lois.
I said no one knows more about Kiss than I do.
Fellas, please keep it civil.
I'm not sure I like the tone of your voice, Dave.
Well, throw down, if that's what you want.
Name Gene Simmons' special effects mentor.
Amazo the Magician. What high school did Paul Stanley go to?
New York High School of Music. Paul and Gene's band before Kiss.
Wicked Lester. What year did Kiss appear on the Jim Neighbors Halloween special?
Trick question. It was Paul Lynde, and it was 1975. Now recite the magazine ad that brought Peter Criss to Paul and Gene's attention.
Drummer willing to do anything to make it. Rolling Stone, October 1972. Exemplary.
Rock and roll.
That's great that you got that Mike Florio sound in there still.
It's verbatim. It's exactly what the man does.
Awesome.
I'm telling you, early Family Guy, man, that first like three seasons, untouchable.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Don't miss your chance to watch Big Ten football at Ryan Field this fall as the Big Ten West champion Northwestern Wildcats host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at nusports.com. I can say that I have seen Kiss, and this when you cover a lot of Super Bowls, you get to say you've seen a lot of bands and performers live because you get these, who were they with? I want to say it was like Kiss and Diana Ross, so there was some like weird combination of people at one of the Super Bowls.
I can't remember who it was.
I was close enough that when those flash pots go off, the bloom of heat that you get off of those is intense. I know people have experienced this before at various indoor sporting events or whatever it is, and arena football, but that gets to you when those things go.
I was at the Orange Bowl and we had ZZ Top playing. They played. It was like. you know, it's the Orange Bowl, so they're not doing the full blown out halftime show or anything like that. They played four songs in 2 minutes. You know, they just did like the medley thing, sure. One song into another.
But you still saw ZZ was, Top.
But I saw ZZ Top, and then they walked out and snowed in Miami for the first time in 50 years. I was happy to be there. We're going to talk tournaments. We're going to talk NCAA hoops with Brian Hamilton in just a couple of minutes. But the NCAA is making a little bit of headline on Twitter lately. I don't know if you've seen the ad. You probably have. You can go to the NCAA Twitter profile and find it. I'll retweet it here in a second, at C1 McKnight. The show will retweet it as well. And it's just, it's a 30-second ad. They've been running it on, you know, True TV and TBS okay. and TNT and all this stuff, right? And it's a promo. It's along the lines of, and they still do these ads. I remember them when they first started. It's, you know, of our 400,000 student athletes, or whatever the hell the number is, 2%. Will go pro. The rest will go pro in something else. It's the whole, it's the student athlete farce, right? They just promote this and that whole thing. So the new ad that they're running is, it's like a selfie angle, right? It's a student who's, you know, it's got the one shot, the entire ad, and it just kind of cuts from him waking up in the morning and suddenly he's in class and then he's walking around campus and then he's in practice and then he's in a lab or something like that. And the caption of the ad is student and athlete, a day in the life. Now, what has happened to this ad is that former NCAA athletes like Alvin Kamara, for instance, are retweeting the hell out of this thing.
Oh, it's getting dunked
on. With captions like, what the hell is this? Or never happened, or this is not accurate, or I want my money back. All of this stuff.
A lot of the Jonah Hill gif of like the shut it down.
All
kind of thing.
That. Yeah. All, and it's fascinating to me that now, and I'm sure this would have happened in the past, and you've got, I forget who it is, I think it's, is it Reggie or somebody Jerry Rice. I think it's Jerry Rice, who does one of the ads about, you know, being a student athlete and the education is so much more valuable and blah, 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 all this stuff. And it's just, it's even more jarring to me. And I know this is a me thing. I know some people don't give a damn about it, but I can't look away from it. If you're Zion Williamson, if you're a one and done in college basketball right now, you attend 6 months of classes. You only have to put up, you know, the bare minimum of grades to keep yourself eligible in those 6 months. Then once the tournament is over, you can essentially drop out of school and just prepare yourself for the NBA draft. And yet they're right there, the NCAA, I've retweeted the ad, they're right there putting it out there the way it doesn't happen. Like, you have to go all the way down to, and no disrespect intended, but all the way down to your play-in games, your Loyolas, your, you know what I'm saying? Like, those are the schools where you're there for 6 years. And even then, that's not the life of a student and athlete. Not in college basketball.
It's not even close.
Not in football. That happens for, like, the crew team. That happens
maybe.
For, like, the... Yeah, maybe.
This segment's brought to you by Neumail Medical Center. Discover the new you, newmailmedical.com. While we were touching on some musical stuff here, I meant to bring this back around. A couple of days ago, we were talking about the death of Dick Dale, and you were talking about double picking.
Yeah.
And saying there's something going on with two picks. And we learned
you can play with two picks. It's not okay, double picking.
We learned that double picking is playing the same string up and down. So I got to the gym. And my buddy Mitch was there. He is a professional guitarist, guitar teacher.
Oh.
It is what he does
for
a living. Not on the side.
I need one.
It is his job. He's in the city.
I need one. I need to get back and playing.
He is the best. And he said, I wanted a text. I couldn't. I was listening to the show. There's nothing. He said, there is no thing with two picks.
Huh.
He said, you can do finger picks,
yeah.
Which is more of a folk type of sound where you've seen those that actually go around your finger. There's folk guitar.
Or you can grow your fingernails out if you don't have. You
know, however, he said there is hybrid picking. He said what you're talking about is a technique. There is hybrid picking, and there's a subset of hybrid picking known as Travis picking. And he wanted me to. I had to be very specific about this.
I'm happy to know.
And he teaches it, and he says that there is a way that you can use a pick and pick the strings with the other fingers while using your pick. And there's a specific pattern referred to as Travis picking. So he wanted to have that wisdom.
So what he's saying is, take a lesson, dumbass.
Yes, and he does kids, adults, it's all fair. Of it. So. I can. I'll hook you up on Twitter.
I need some lessons. I want to get back into it. You know, I mean, why? Yeah, I keep. I pick it up and then I put it down. I pick it up and I put it down, and you don't get any better when you put it down.
you're halfway there.
As it turns out, practice is the way to get better at these things.
We are going to have a conversation with Brian Hamilton. I want to talk a little bit about the Dick Vitale comments, a little bit about the tournament itself. I actually watched Belmont and Temple last night. It was a good game.
I wanted to fall in love with Belmont. I wanted to do it. I didn't quite get there.
They were made shots. That's all I asked for. Don't have a missed shot festival, and I'll be interested enough. Basketball talk next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Belmont is going to advance. Rick Bird has had 804 career wins as a coach, but he's going to remember 805, maybe more than any of them, because he has just notched, in his 33 years of coaching, his first trip to the NCAA tournament as an at-large team, and he's won his first NCAA tournament game.
That's really cool. That was on True TV last night. And yes, this is the time in the calendar where you remember where True TV is. For those of us with DirecTV, it is 246. It's right in between TBS and TNT, so it makes it awfully easy. And the NCAA tournament is underway. Here to talk about that and more is Brian Hamilton. He is on Twitter at @Brian_Hamilton, senior writer for The Athletic and Big Ten Network as well. He joins the Bernstein and McKnight Show on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. What's happening, Brian?
Nothing much. Heading to bucolic Columbus, Ohio. So it's the best time of year. Pumped up for it.
Excellent. We spent a lot of time talking about the tournament the last couple of days. We haven't spent a lot of time talking about Kentucky for whatever reason. They're a two seed. They've gotten themselves to where they're kind of always at. Is there like a reason why we might have missed Kentucky in the first couple of days of conversation? What has their season looked like to you?
Well, I think we all know how it looked like at the start when Duke ran them off the floor at the Champions Classic. I wasn't sure that any team could recover from what Duke did to them that night. I mean, I was there. It was not pretty. And it's a lot to recover from. But I think over time, Kentucky found its identity. They became a much better defensive team. They locked in that way. They were able to win games by stopping you. This wasn't a John Calipari roll out five McDonald's All-Americans and just, you know, sort of out-athlete you. No, they played real solid defense. Obviously, they have Reed Travis, his grad transfer from Stanford, so they were older that way. P.J. Washington, especially in the second half of the season, SEC tournament play, SEC conference play, I should say. I mean, he looked like an SEC player of the year for most of January and February and into March. So they really developed over time. Now, the question is how healthy P.J. Washington is right now. I saw reports that he had a walking boot on. We'll see how ready he is, because I think they'll be fine in the first round. Whoever they see in the second round, Wofford or Seton Hall, that's going to be a challenge for them. I mean, Seton Hall is capable of toughening up, beating good teams. Wofford, Fletcher McGee can bomb away from three-point range, and that'll keep them in a lot of games. So we'll see how healthy Kentucky is, especially in that second-round matchup. It'll be key.
What teams do you want to see stylistically? Because I think sometimes we can look at individual players and get excited about that. I love when there's still teams left in the game that play a different way, that want to accomplish something, that have a system, or that because of how they recruit, just do something in a way that others don't. Are there matchups on there that intrigue you?
Well, I think, you know, just in terms of stylistic play, I mean, I don't know that I'm necessarily rooting for anybody, but I think you can look at the way Virginia plays offense this year. I mean, we'll see how long they last in the tournament, but they have an offense right now where they can score. They not only have a lot of people that can score, they have a lot of places that they can score from and a lot of ways to score, and it's really a backstop against any defensive failure with that system. I was there at that UMBC-UVA game last year. Once Virginia couldn't stop UMBC, it just had nowhere to turn to. That won't be the case this year. The way they share the ball, move the ball, make plays, the efficient offense they run, it might not be as fast as everybody likes to see, but it's really pretty basketball when you look at it. Likewise, the ability of North Carolina and Michigan State to change ends is unbelievable. I mean, the way they get up and down the floor after makes, I mean, early in the season, late in the season, it's almost like Michigan State is fast breaking off makes. I mean, that's how fast Cassius Winston can get the ball off the floor. Kobe White, North Carolina, same thing. If you're looking for defense, I would be interested in watching Texas Tech. I mean, they play as good or better defense than anybody in the country. It's a unique system. They call it side defense at all costs. They don't allow you to get to the middle of the floor. They're essentially dictating where you can play offense, and that's a really hard thing for teams to adjust to on the fly if they hadn't seen it before.
Now, when they when you say that, are they icing every pick and roll?
They're basically saying, we're going to turn our back to the lane, and you're going to the side. You are just not allowed to go in the middle. I mean, it is pretty much that simple. They don't really exaggerate it, overplay you on the outside, but they kind of also sort of do. They kind of pretty much just say, if you're going to run a screen roll up top, we're going to hedge out. We're going to force you to the side. We're not letting you get to the middle of the floor because bad things happen when they get there. And that's hard for teams to deal with because they're just saying, hey, you're going here and figure it out from there. Likewise, it makes Texas Tech's prep on short turnarounds like the NCAA tournament pretty easy because they don't change what they do based on what you do. They'll dictate to you how you're going to play offense.
So, Brian, Gonzaga gets a one seed, and I would imagine that in the college basketball cognoscenti, there is a sense that they have arrived, that they have made it. They are a destination program. But for those outside that circle, they're still waiting for them to do something. They play in that weird conference. Mark Few's name is fairly well known. Is there a next step for them outside of, you know, winning a championship? Like, is there something else for them to do in the realm of college basketball that makes them more known, more of the small school, big time program? Or is it just winning games in the tourney?
You know, if anybody's wondering what Gonzaga has done, then I'd suggest they missed the national championship game a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, they were one game away from, you know, sitting up there and hoisting a trophy up on a podium while the confetti fell. I mean, you look at their runs to the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight, the title game a couple of years ago. It's not like they haven't done anything. I mean, if you think Gonzaga is just this team that racks up wins against, you know, bad teams out west and then just flames out in the tournament, then you're not paying attention. Yeah, I mean, they spend money like a major program spends money. They have players on the roster that are going to be on NBA rosters next year and could be lottery picks. They have a veteran guard, Josh Perkins, running the whole show. I mean, they're built to make a Final Four run. They're built to make a championship run. I mean, if you took Gonzaga off their jerseys and switched it out with any major conference program, like, you wouldn't know the difference. I mean, they would be a contender in just about every league out there. They've beaten good teams. They beat Duke in Maui. I mean, this is a really good basketball team. There's not much left for them to do except make it to the championship game. And if people just think, hey, they're this random program that plays in a bad league, and that's how they get all their success, I mean, they're just not paying attention to what Gonzaga is doing.
We talked about the comments from Dick Vitale yesterday, and it's to hear this guy, and we have people my age who know him really as the man that shepherded this sport into the modern ESPN cable television era. And to hear him, who's long been a cheerleader for all the coaches of the game and the student athletes,
right,
when he's using the word cesspool, when he's talking about paying the players, when he says we have to, we know all this dirty stuff is going on. To me, I mean, this was a wow moment. This is like Cronkite in Vietnam. Do you feel similarly?
I think it's taken Dick a while to come around to the reality of the sport that he loves. To be honest with you, I mean, you know, he's saying it, and all that means is, we all know what's going on right now. And a lot of us have known that this is just the way the business is done. This is how the sausage is made in college basketball. And the fact that Dick is coming around and understanding, hey, all these rules are being broken, is sort of just like, he doesn't have a choice at this point. I mean, when you see lawsuits, when you see people pleading guilty in federal court, when you see black and white transcripts of wiretaps, I mean, it's hard to remain in denial at that point. I will say this, like, I don't really think that paying players is ever going to happen as much as the name and likeness issue will come around, and we'll see more of an Olympic model for college athletes where they can benefit from name and likeness. I mean, the economics and the tax implications of actually salarying these players, that's probably a little bit above my pay grade as a former English major, but I do think the name and likeness issue is really at the core of it. Let these kids profit off of what they're doing in some way for these schools. Like, schools are making millions and billions of dollars. Well, this kid can maybe like do an ad or, you know, sign a shoe deal or sign an endorsement deal, make a little money for themselves that way. I think that's the more realistic path we're headed.
So we've come to the Ja Morant portion of the survey. It's also a 12-5 matchup with everybody loves picking. Where are you at on the presumed second overall pick in the NBA draft?
Yeah, so I think at full health, Marquette is a better team. You know, I've seen them play a bunch this year. I've seen them at their best. I've seen them when they've not played so well. I still think overall, at full health, Marquette's a better team. I just don't know that they're at full health.
Yeah.
I mean, Marcus Howard's wrist is a problem. It was not good in the Big East tournament. He struggled to find any sort of touch with that wrist as they flamed out, I think, in the semifinals, the Big Ten. If he's not right, if he's not 100% healthy, then I think they're really vulnerable. Because not only are you losing out on a guy who's going to pour 20 points, 25 points a game in, and that's the way it's been all year. That's how you played all year. And now you've got to figure out a solution on the fly just before the NCAA tournament. On the flip side of that, I don't know who guards Ja Morant. You know, Sam Hauser is probably Marquette's best on-ball one-on-one defender, but he's just not at 6'8". He's not going to be able to stay in front of Ja Morant. You could put Sakaar Anem on him, which is, I assume, what Marquette will do. I don't know that Anem is a high-level enough defender to really give Ja Morant all that many problems. So healthy Marcus Howard, healthy Marquette, I can see them getting through. Not healthy Marcus Howard plus Ja Morant being a matchup problem, I think the upset's on the way.
Ooh, there you have it. Brian Hamilton on college basketball. Great stuff.
Thanks, Brian. Thank you.
Yep, thank you.
Brian Hamilton from The Athletic and the Big Ten Network.
I'm right with him on the Gonzaga thing. I mean, people still look at that bracket. People have like two rules
for
bracket.
Great.
They're there.
Did you watch them against Duke?
They're there. Oh, yeah, yes.
I mean, that was.
They're there. They're. People still have a rule. It's like the Izzo-Gonzaga thing. You fill out your bracket and then erase wherever you had Izzo's team ending and advance them one more game, and then you take the Bulldogs and erase wherever you had them landing and you reverse it one game. That no longer exists. That's done now. It's over. They are a program. They have announced themselves. They're there, even if they do lose to St. Mary's every other year in some sort of embarrassing end. They are a program arrived.
We have the Midday Midway coming up. I have a shortage of something very, very important in my kitchen. It might be doubling in price, and you need to know about it. I have a miracle in the Great Plains flood. I also am going to help you unravel the mystery of Stonehenge.
We're going to who builds a Stonehenge? Drunk on drunk crime, a cockroach that caused death, and the FCC complaints for the Super Bowl are out, and some of them are hysterical. We'll get to them next. It's Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.